Okay, so anyway, so the reason why I'm eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is because was listening to an episode of Joe Rogan's podcast, and then I heard about this shake that he makes, which apparently is just great. So I went and tried to find all of the ingredients, but it was like a bunch of weird stuff that I don't know where to find in the grocery store, like ginger root and garlic and.
You
just
don't know
named
where to find
two
ginger and
really
garlic?
straightforward ingredients, Mikhail. Did it also include spinach and carrots?
No, and kale, because like they have the
It's right by the
kale.
spinach.
It's in they've okay at my local grocery store. They have kale in two different spots. In one of the spots where it's very obvious, it comes in like a bag. I don't know, like about the size of a backpack. And I'm like, I do not need that much kale. So then I spent a little while looking around to see like do they sell it in less amounts, and I did find a smaller amount of kale that you can buy, but it was like in the organic section on the opposite side of the store.
Okay.
Anyway, so it took me a while, and then I didn't have enough time to make, a more substantial meal. So now I'm gonna finish eating my peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Did you make the shake and was it good?
I don't have time. You want me to do the coyote story now, or do you want to do corner case corner?
We haven't ordered the things, Mikhail, as dictated by the man who wrote the show notes.
Okay, so did we actually call it corner case corner last time? Can't remember.
It's been like 3 weeks,
Yeah.
and you came up with the name like a day after we recorded.
Oh, okay. So anyway, corner case corner. It's like when an edge case meets another edge case. And then you got a corner case. Anyway, so following up on from what happened last time, I was trying to get my second generation iPod Shuffle to be like a white noise machine. So it has one song on it, and it's just 2 hours of like rain noise. And I was struggling a lot with it last time because I was trying to get it set up, and it's so old that like it just wouldn't be recognized on the newest version of iTunes. But then, since I bought that ThinkPad from Mark a couple of weeks ago, which, by the way, thank you, Mark,
Yep.
and I plugged it into that, and it just like came up as a part of the file system, and something happened. I don't know what, but now it just works.
The dream.
I know.
Like you plugged it into the
Like I plugged it into the ThinkPad and then it
Just
started
like a USB
charging.
media device on Ubuntu.
Yeah, it said like, "Do you want to view the files?" I was like, "Sure." And then it said, and then like this song came up, and I was like, "Yep, that seems about right. It's 2 hours long, and it says rain." and then I just like unplugged it, and then later I tried, just plugging it in again because I'd like plugged it in my speakers and hit play, and like the light didn't even flash. But then after plugging it into the ThinkPad, like I hit play, and the green light turns on, and it starts making rain noises.
Another victory for Linux.
Yep. Oh my, the next one is me as well. Oh boy. Okay, so this will be a short one, and probably it isn't relevant to probably anybody who might ever listen to this. But there's a format that you can use for a hard drive or like a flash drive, that so you can like format it to this, and it's called FAT32. And I use this a lot because it works pretty much the same across Mac, Linux, Windows. It just like you can plug it in and then you can just view the files because like there's some formats that only work on one. But the thing about FAT32 is because of the way it's structured, you can't have an individual file on there bigger than 4 gigabytes. And for most of what I do, that's not a problem because, like even if you have like a 2 hour long video, that's maybe gonna be like three unless you have it at a crazy high resolution. But I have been having this problem because High Sierra on the Mac, for some reason, had this glitch where it would, instead of thinking it was FAT32, it thought it was FAT16, which was the previous version, which has a much like an exponentially smaller maximum file size. So this is like FAT32 is what I use for my backup drive. So I wasn't able to put in files that were, you know, like maybe bigger than a gig or I forget what the exact number was. But the good news is, as of OS X 10.13.5, this is now fixed, which I was very happy about.
Well, that is just refreshing to hear.
Yep.
No, this all is of us thing non-Mac I've been dealing users.
With for 2 years now.
Huh.
That bothered you for 2 years?
Yes.
There were no solutions?
No, because I like looked it up and there was one form that mentioned the problem and no replies.
Huh.
Like this is like a great example of a corner case because like it's something that somebody should never have encountered, but somehow I did.
That's a real bummer.
Yep.
Yeah, I think all my flash drives are in FAT32 because basically all of my flash drives are bootable with like various versions of Linux on them.
Yeah, it's great. I love that format.
Yeah. Until you have to try and use them on a Windows computer and then you have to reformat them. And then
I've never had to do that.
Well, I've had various small issues.
Wait, were you trying to boot from it?
No. No, I was trying to reuse the flash drive.
Oh, okay.
It was another small thing that I feel like I either talked to you about, Mikhail, or I talked on the last episode, I don't remember, where my computer, like I somehow corrupted my OS just by trying to reformat a flash drive.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
You, like, broke your computer, basically?
Yeah, all I wanted to do was, like, completely wipe a flash drive and put a picture on it. That's all I was trying to do. And then I booted, and then the computer said, sorry, something went wrong. And I had to reinstall Windows.
Did it blue screen? Do they have blue that in Linux?
Well, no, this was on Windows.
Oh, this was on Windows. Okay.
Yeah, this was a Windows issue.
I forgot Linux doesn't have problems.
Well, if they do, then it's, like, white text on a black background and a lot of scary looking text.
Oh gosh, that's way scarier.
Yeah. All right, I guess I'm next. I don't even remember. Did I type this in the document myself?
It has your name on it.
Oh man. Well, okay. So a month or two ago, I got a Wacom tablet.
What's that?
It's like the digitizers where you have like a little pad next to you and then a pen that doesn't have a battery, and then you can kind of hover over it to use it as a cursor and like tap to use it as a mouse.
Have you ever seen behind the scenes footage of Pixar?
I mean, I have.
Oh, I've, yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean now.
It's like, yeah, so it's used a lot by,
yeah, graphic designers and animators and digital artists and stuff. But it's also just good for general ergonomic use and like for things like, I got it when I started editing the podcast because it has various hotkeys on it and stuff that make things easier to use. But anyway, I was trying to use it on Linux and it was really hard to map the buttons to things. And so I eventually, after a couple hours of playing around with it and being assured that the OS that I used did in fact have Wacom support and you could go and look and go into the settings and be like, hey, here's the Wacom settings section. But you don't have a tablet, do you? I'm like, yes, I do. I have it plugged in right here. I eventually had to map it all via the terminal.
Oh, God.
But I need to set it up in like a boot up file because anytime I restart my computer, the mappings get wiped.
Mm.
So.
Jeez.
But luckily, I don't have to restart my computer very frequently, so it's not a big deal. Yet.
Yet.
Yep.
That was foreboding. Thanks for that.
Yep.
What do you have, Jack?
This happened to me today, and it was very annoying. I'm working on a project at work using a piece of National Instruments hardware to collect data from the implantable medical device that my company makes. And unfortunately, because of just the nature of the beast, I was collecting data that just by its nature looked exactly like the data I was expecting to see, but wasn't. It was actually incorrect, and there were bugs in my code that were that meant that I wasn't actually collecting that data. And I finally realized it because my supervisor was trying to help me improve my code to add a feature, and I looked at the way I had written one thing and just went, I just looked at him and just went, "F me, Doug." This is all wrong. And then I changed it to what was correct, and then it demonstrated to us immediately that it had been completely wrong and was collecting one data point and not 200,000.
I think the best part about that
story, that was good,
is that your coworker's name is Doug.
Yeah, Doug Murphy. He's a great man. He knows so many hotkeys. It blows my mind. He's one of those, he looks like a hacker in a movie where he like just clicks all over his keyboard really quickly and his windows move around to like the corners of his screen and he moves them from monitor to monitor and he opens things from terminal very quickly without touching his mouse. And I'm like, you look like a hacker.
Does he use Vim too?
I don't know what that is.
Is Ooh, Vim does the it, thing no, that does pops he use up? VI?
What?
Somebody's going to get that joke at some point. But oh well.
I got, well, Jack was talking over you, so I only heard maybe the second half of it.
Oh, I was wondering if, you know, like, does he, if he doesn't use Vim, does he use VI?
Oh, that's all you said? Okay. That can only tenuously be called a joke.
Okay, you know, whatever.
And I didn't even get it.
It's just it's a text editor that's typically used, like, in a terminal, but you can navigate everywhere just using the keyboard. Like, if you hit, like, J, you go down a line. Oh. Like, there's just, like, little commands to do to navigate everywhere in the document. And then if you want to actually type something, then you just hit I for input mode, type, and then hit escape to get back to, like, command mode.
Interesting.
Steep learning curve.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. That looks terrible. I just Googled it. I'm very intimidated.
Yep.
But no, I solved my problem, and by that I mean I found out that I have a lot of work to do on Monday, because this was at 4 p.m. today.
Oh, jeez.
Good. Great. Okay. Do you have any fun technology issues?
Not right now.
Lucky. Hopefully none of them show up during this recording.
My life is perfect, Mark.
Oh, good.
I'm glad to hear it.
We didn't even introduce our guest. We are the worst hosts of a podcast ever.
You know, I was wondering about that.
I can slash it in later.
Am I just going to be that dude who just like pops up and everyone's just like, who is this guy? And
then never shows up again.
Mark, take it away.
This is Grant. We went to high school with him, and he joined us at the escape room that we are going to talk about later in this episode.
Yeah. Just one last story, and then we'll get to the escape room. So this morning I was out on a run, and there's this area next to my house called the Pine Ridge Natural Area. And it's kind of like a valley, like prairie in a valley there. So I go from my house, and then you have to go up and over this ridge, and then there's a valley, and then there's an even higher ridge. So like in this area, there's between the two ridges, there's some running trails that you can go on. And there are also a lot of prairie dogs there, which is great. I love to watch them. They just like pop up and down from their holes as I'm running by, make weird noises. But then I was on my way back, going up that, going back over the ridge. And then all of a sudden I hear this noise. And if you guys click on the link in the show notes, like, and go to like 20 seconds, that's pretty much exactly what I started hearing as I was coming up this ridge. So just let me know when you guys listen to that. Huh.
I guess it's like canine-like a little. Man, that's strange.
That was a very weird noise. I didn't like any of that.
Grant, you were able to hear it?
Yeah.
That's yeah,
sounds concerning.
It's incredibly concerning. And the first thing that I thought was because I first thought that it was a bunch of prairie dogs because, like, when I heard it, I could clearly hear there were, like, more than 10 of them, like 10 different animal voices screaming. And but then, like, I got up onto the ridge, and then there's this man walking by, and I said, like, hey, do you hear that? He's like, yeah, the coyotes are getting pretty crazy. I was like, what, those are coyotes? He's like, I could hear him, like, there must have been at least 10 coyotes that were making those noises. It was just, I've never heard anything like that before. It's crazy.
Huh.
Do you want to hear a really cool fun fact about coyote calls?
Yes.
So, coyotes are one of the most difficult species. So, they're very invasive in a lot of areas, and they get into people's yards and kill small animals, and they're very obnoxious. But mm-hmm. they're possibly the most difficult species to eradicate from an area or even to push out, because every night when they, or basically any time that they are doing those calls, it's effectively a roll call for all the members of their pack. And it's been demonstrated by studies that in that roll call, if any coyotes are missing, the female coyotes in the pack have radically increased litter sizes from like averaging like 4 pups per litter to like 10.
Damn.
Huh.
So if you kill any, they will reproduce more. They're like a hydra.
Oh my god. Oh my Damn. God, that's amazing.
So don't kill coyotes if you were planning on it. I don't know if you were planning on it, but
leave it to the professionals.
You have to make sure you get them all.
Yeah, you have to get all of them or none of them.
Or let's be real, at least just all of the females.
Oh, that's true. It's gotta be precise. Gotta check their genitals first.
I feel like it might just be easy to kill them all.
Maybe.
Depends how many. Depends if you want to look at coyote genitals. It's really subjective.
How long do you get between roll calls?
Oh, good question. Unsure. I thought that they only did it at night, but I don't think Mikhail was running in the middle of the night. I think he was running at a reasonable time of day.
No, it was this morning.
What time ish? If you remember.
I don't know. The sun was up. I think it might have been like 8-ish.
Okay.
That's mountain time. Not that that really matters, but...
No, mountain time was also the coyote's time, so I don't really care about the time change.
Should we get to Escapology?
I think it's pronounced Escapology.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're,
we
yeah,
don't
they
have
got,
dainty enough
said,
British you know. Accents to pull that off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Escapology.
So, just for those of you who aren't familiar, it's this company that operates these rooms that you can go into. And the point of the room is that there's a timer, and usually you have something like maybe about an hour. And then you get, like, quote-unquote locked into the room. Like, you can open it if you really need to, but the idea is that you get locked in the room, and then there are puzzles that you have to solve. Like, you have to, find keys or, find combinations, and then, solve all the puzzles, and then the last puzzle will take you out of the room. So this is what we did over 4th of July weekend, and it was me, Mark, Jack, Grant, who is with us now. Hello, Grant.
Hello.
And then also our friend Max, who...
Who we don't like enough to invite on the podcast.
I just didn't want to edit for 5 people.
That is fair. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Anyway, our room that we went into... do you remember what it was called, Mark?
Budapest Express.
Mm-hmm.
It was a murder mystery.
Yeah, so the premise was...
Classic whodunit.
Yeah, it was like a whodunit where you're in the room and then you're told that you are a detective who's on the train and he's been pulled over by, I guess, the constable. I'm not sure what they call policemen in Europe, but... and he tells you that there's been a murder. And so you have about an hour until the train stops. And when the train stops, they know that the killer will be able to just exit the train and, get away with it. So you have to solve the murder before the train stops in an hour.
One of my favorite things about the escape room is that you're not simply in one room. It was a chain of, at least in this case, I'm not sure how their other scenarios are set up, but it was a series of three rooms in a row that were mimicking, in our case, train cars because of the context of the puzzle. And so a big part of the puzzle was that we were solving part of, we had a bunch of clues in front of us in the first room, and a certain subset of them helped us to unlock the door to the second room, at which point a combination of clues from the first and second rooms helped us to open the next door, and then a combination of clues from all throughout the entire series was what we needed to discover who had committed the murder and unlock the door to leave, and that was what stopped the timer. I thought the setup was really interesting. It was just really fun to have to look after that much information. I'm glad we had five people, or we might not have finished.
Oh, yeah. What, Mark, what place did we get? You said we got on the leaderboard, right? Man.
I think 82nd the last time I had checked.
Nice.
We can do better. We can do better. That's not good, Mikhail.
We can do better if we went back.
Oh, I mean, if we did that one again, we'd wreck.
Well, this isn't Team Mark.
Are
this
you allowed to
team
do
Mikhail.
That?
They couldn't stop us.
The people that won definitely went back.
I don't know. They did say that they had t-shirts.
Yeah, maybe it's like a thing that they just do on a regular basis.
Yeah, they probably have honor.
They all go without t-shirts, so no one remembers them, and then they come back next time with t-shirts and just own.
Well, I think if they came back, they would have done it faster than 27 minutes. If we went back,
oh,
we
that's
could
true.
Have done
oh.
it in like 15.
Yeah.
That's very true.
I think the issue is that I was the only one who had done an escape room before. I mean, luckily, you know, I talked to like my parents about it and stuff afterward, but I felt lucky that I was with a group of people who were like in the mindset and could adjust themselves to like the sorts of puzzles that we would be doing right away. Like nobody had an issue just going with it. You know, mm-hmm. maybe for yeah. like Mikhail and Jack, maybe playing like Republic of Commandos a bit gets you in that sort of a mindset.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, I thought it was just fun. Like, I'd played puzzle games before, like mostly, yeah, like you said, like role playing games or text adventures, and yeah, it was really fun to just kind of get lost in the puzzles. I don't know about you guys. I wasn't like hugely, you know, I wasn't like hugely into this story. I was more just in it for like how clever of a puzzle could a person make.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
the story was fine. Yeah, I mean there were definitely plot holes.
Oh yeah.
So it's not like that was the point. The plot hole was that you couldn't just keep everybody on the train until you figured it out. Like, what was this time limit nonsense?
Yeah,
just don't let them off the train.
The time limit was also that you thought that you were going to get murdered too if you weren't fast.
That's
enough.
True. That was more of like a nestled part of the plot, I guess. Oh, they yeah. revealed that later that you thought you might get wrecked.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree that it's definitely more about the puzzle and kind of getting impressed with the creativity of a single puzzle and also how they can kind of layer some things together.
Yeah, and actually yeah, I wanted to talk about like our favorite parts of the whole experience, and for me I think my favorite puzzle that we figured out was the wine bottle, you know.
Oh,
remember
that
the wine
was
bottle?
So
oh, yeah,
fun
at the beginning. Yeah,
oh my
yeah,
gosh,
which I think Mark you should insert the clip here.
Sure, I'll
nice
try.
Should I, can I summarize the puzzle? I loved the puzzle.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It was so fun. So, scattered throughout the room in a ton of, the first room that we were in was the dining car of the train. So there was like a small bar area and some chairs and a table. And scattered throughout the room, there were pieces of a puzzle that was missing one piece. And it was the puzzle displayed a poem. And the last word of the poem was the combination to a lock on a chest that revealed the last of these wine bottles that were also scattered throughout the room. And on the inside of each wine bottle, on the back of the front label, so you had to look through the glass portion of the bottle, obviously, were a series of symbols. And then So we ordered the bottle by vintage year, of course, as one would do instinctively. And each of the symbols throughout, we found them throughout the room associated with a direction, like a cardinal direction, up, left, right, or down. And the combination lock to get us out of the room required those inputs. So we needed to, from the insides of these wine bottles, deduce the combination to the lock. It was so nestled in all of these different things. I loved it. I thought it was incredible.
Oh, wait. Okay, so this car has a left arrow. Is there a symbol for a balloon with an arrow? Yeah, so, yeah, so boat is up.
Oh, so it's for that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so car's left.
So his ship is up, so his left was balloon.
Yeah. Yes, there should be a picture of a balloon somewhere with an arrow next to it.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully. It might be on one of... Oh, here it is. Balloon is right.
Balloon is right.
Okay, so then what, the other one is...
Are there any other... Bicycle, okay, bicycle is down.
Okay.
So...
It's...
One second,
Oh, well, here, just read it off, and then jack right down
I can translate.
Oh, okay.
Car.
Okay.
Balloon.
Balloon.
Ship.
Ship.
Balloon.
Balloon.
Bicycle.
Bike.
Ship.
Ship.
Car. Car.
Car. Car.
Nice.
Yes!
Nice.
Yeah.
Such a fun puzzle to put together.
I'd never seen a combination lock that was just directions before. That was interesting.
I didn't know they existed. Yeah.
I had seen them at, like, Target before. But it is a really... Like, they like to use a lot of different kinds of locks if they can. It is fun when you can get a different one like that. And also what I thought was kind of a fun, subtle thing that took us, like, 2 seconds longer than we needed to. I think it was, like, there was no symbol. Like basically, you know... The symbols were like, oh, balloon, car, tree,
bike.
Bike. And three of them were hiding, you know, there was one like a picture, one in a bookmark, whatever, with the cardinal direction associated with them. And so we wrote all those down. And then one of them didn't have a symbol. And it took us like a couple extra seconds to be like, oh, we have three out of the four. We don't really need a fourth one. Which I feel like probably could have confused other groups even more than it confused us.
I agree. It took us slightly longer than I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like the missing last puzzle piece and how it didn't exist and you just had to guess.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I finally realized
that. We definitely spent like a solid couple minutes looking around for that last puzzle piece, I feel like. And then eventually... I think it was you and me, Jack, right? We were just kind of like, wait, there's something wrong here.
Yeah, it just, we looked for so long that there was no way it was anywhere. And then I realized that just the way that the puzzle was laid out, like, you know how a jigsaw puzzle, it either has like each of the sides of a puzzle piece are either what I'd call like a male side or a female side. Like there's either a bump or there's a gap for a bump to fit into. And sure. The way that the gap was set up, there was a bump hanging down in the middle. So if there was intended to be another word there, you'd be able to see part of it. Like if you can picture like a series of words are on this grid of puzzle pieces, you would have been able to see at least a couple of the letters of this word if there had been a word there. So I just immediately realized, oh, there's no extra puzzle piece. This is just the puzzle. It's over now. Like we just need to guess what the word is. So it took us way longer than it should have. It took us probably... 5 to 10 minutes to make that realization after we'd found all the puzzle pieces.
Oh, pretty clever.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, what was your favorite puzzle?
I think just the very last thing, just because it was so infuriating that we didn't figure it out like 7 minutes sooner. The fact that the last thing was this logic puzzle on a piece of laminated paper with a dry erase marker. So we set Jack to work on it. And there is a sheet that basically said, oh, whose number is up? And we knew that if we could figure out, it was like, who's the killer? Where'd they come from? What did they use? What was their fingerprint on? And what cabin were they in? And if you could figure out all those things... then all those would correspond to numbers that we could then plug into a lock to open up the quote-unquote brake panel to stop the train. And we finished the logic puzzle correctly, and then didn't realize that there was a second layer to picking these numbers. And then we thought that we were wrong, redid the entire logic puzzle again, and then like 6-7 minutes later got it confirmed from our game master by using a hint that we did have everything correct, and then we were just like forgetting that there were clues still from the first and second room that we needed to use, that someone, I think, I don't remember who it was, one of you guys totally figured out that we needed to be using those like underlined stuff, like there was something there.
I think that was then, Grant. Like,
yeah, and then we never actually remembered to use it to the very end. So, but that was really cool that they added that extra layer, so it wasn't, because when I saw that, oh, it's just a logic puzzle, how fast can we finish this, I was like, oh, that was kind of disappointing. And then getting totally tricked by that last thing made it feel a lot better.
When the numbers didn't work and we just thought like the lock didn't work, I was so upset. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
I also thought it was hilarious that, so when you initially pulled out the sheet of paper, because there was the logic puzzle, and then there's the sheet of paper that gave you hints to actually solve the logic puzzle. And then on that is where you write in like the final combination. And when Mark initially pulled it out of there, there was stuff written on the document. He handed it to Jack, and Jack just like erased it.
I didn't want it. I didn't want to cheat.
Fair enough.
I didn't need their help. Maybe they were wrong. I guess we could have tried it, but that would have been really lame.
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
And we still wouldn't have gotten the record.
I'm going to give you guys this. I'm going to send you this link on Skype. That logic puzzle immediately reminded me of a logic puzzle that I gave some high schoolers when I was tutoring freshman year. Mm. That was supposedly created by Einstein. And it's one of those things where it's just like, you can come up with logic puzzles that it's essentially a linear algebra problem, you know? How many variables can you introduce and how many do you need to solve for? So the one that I'm sending you, it's called Who Owns the Fish? And it's 15 clues that are really to the bare minimum of what you would need to solve it. So I'll put that, I just put that in the Skype chat, but it's a... That's what it reminded me of immediately. Luckily, ours was a bit easier.
Yeah, there was definitely...
I've done this puzzle before.
Okay.
Yeah,
in the one in the escape room, there's definitely superfluous information on there, which, I mean, it was helpful because then we got confirmation on some of the, I guess, guesses that we made initially.
Yeah, but it was kind of weird that it ended that way. I wasn't sure how I felt about it. Like I said, the final puzzle part was cool that they had the extra layer, but I still feel like a little cheated that the last part was just like, here's a puzzle to solve. You know,
something you do in like a elementary school class.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. And like Mikhail said, like, you know, it both brought me out of the story, which like I was kind of invested in, because it's like, well, obviously this would never even kind of happen, you know. So like it brought me out of the story, and it also kind of brought me out of the puzzles too, so that was a little disappointing to me.
The problem I had with the logic puzzle is it was like, it was something that if we really all wanted to, we could have helped on, but while we were doing it, I was like, having five people stand around this one piece of paper is kind of ridiculous. So I felt like I was just like wandering the place trying to figure out what I could do to be useful.
That is fair. That's a totally good point, Grant. That throughout all of it, we each had so much to do and look at. Like we could pair off and find things, or like when we were in the first room especially and we had to like write things down on that whiteboard or with the Morse code stuff, like we could all kind of help out a bit.
Oh, the Morse code.
But definitely
code
at the end, it was just like, what are we going to do? Yeah, you want to talk about the Morse code?
Oh, yeah. Well, off, I thought it was hilarious that it was supposed to be set in 1931, I think.
We were getting telegrams.
Yep. And there were a couple of things that kind of broke out of the story, which I wasn't really invested in, but it was still kind of funny. Like, there was just a pair of really nice over-the-ear headphones.
Yes. Connected to the radio.
Yep. Oh, and then also, the book was, like, from the future, you know, quote unquote, if you were in 1931, like the book that they had in the room was published after that date. But yeah, so the Morse code was neat because they had this old radio, which at least it looked like it was an old radio, but it had like a headphone jack in the side. And then when you plug that in and listen to the headphones, it would play a message in Morse code just over and over again. So then we had to just decipher that. So we had somebody listening to it and just yelling out like if it was dots and dashes. And I was writing that down on the whiteboard. And then we had to figure out what numbers they were because they had a Morse code chart. But then the really frustrating part was that we got one of the numbers slightly wrong. And I remember we were trying, like, because we got this combination, I think it was like 0427 or something. And then we were trying it on like all of the locks and combinations that we could find and just like whatever we could do. And it just wasn't working. And then finally, I forget who listened back to it, but then they noticed that on the last number, like the last, I think it was the last digit that they played, it wasn't actually
a dash, it was a dot.
Yeah.
That was Mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who had been the first one to listen to it?
Super not obvious.
Yep.
Yeah. That was annoying. Well, and the worst thing is that, you know, the hint that, like, I think we didn't even ask for a hint. They just kinda, the game master started putting stuff on the board.
Katie and got like, a little overzealous. Super
unhelpful. It was just like, oh yeah, just use the Morse code. It's like, yeah, we know that. We've been doing that. Are you paying attention to us?
She's like, on the phone.
That's not the issue.
Yeah.
She definitely was on her phone and not watching us at that point.
Yeah. Just,
yeah.
Definitely the case.
That's so true. All right. Mikhail, I want you to tell us about the stupid, stupid map tube in the second room.
Oh my! Actually, I thought that was really cool once we actually figured out what it was for.
Oh, I agree. It was just, that was the most frustrated I got at during the entire time.
So we walk into the second room. Actually, no, there's another thing that I want to bring up after this. Remind me. But so we walk into the second room and we're all excited because, you know, we just solved it. Yeah, the wine bottle puzzle got us into the second room. And then I found this tube because the second one was like a luggage car. So there was this rack of luggage, and then in between the rack of luggage and the wall, there was this tube. It looked like, you know, one of those tubes that you get like a map rolled up in or a poster or something, and it was attached to the wall at like a diagonal angle. And then so I pulled the little plastic stopper off of it, and I noticed that there's a string tied to the stopper, so that I pull it all the way out, and it's this string that's like almost as long, that's as long as the tube itself, and at the end there's like a little hook. And then I was like, huh, that's kind of weird, you know, it's just a string with a hook on it. And then I look down the tube, and there's a key at the bottom. And so I was like, oh no, did the key fall off the hook? Like, was it supposed to be hooked on there as I pulled it out? Because, like, I was so confused. And, I showed it to Mark, and we were, like, pretty frustrated. And we were like, should we tell the Game Master, like, I think this is broken? But then, just as I was about to go into the room and, like, you know, wave at the camera and say, hey, like, I think this is broken, I noticed that in the luggage car, there's a chair, and it's a metal chair. And I looked at it, and I looked that on the back of the chair, like where your back would be if you're sitting on it, there was this hook. And I was like, that's kind of strange. So I looked closer, and I noticed that it's actually a magnet with a hook attached to it, magnetized onto the chair, and it just so happened to be the same color as the chair that it just was blended in. So what I did was, of course, what I did was I pulled that magnet off, I hooked it onto the end of the string, dropped it down the tube, pulled it back up, and then there's a key attached to the magnet.
Why would there be a hook on this? Wait, this is a magnet.
Is there a magnet?
This is a magnet.
Oh, that's incredible.
Oh my god. I like that a lot.
That is really cool.
Oh
my gosh. I was about to break that tube. I was about to just go in.
I was too. Yeah. I saw that it was very heavily taped on the bottom end, and clearly a lot of people had ripped it off.
Yep.
The hardest trick in the room.
Oh, man.
I thought that was brilliant, though.
I thought it was pretty good, yeah. I thought it was a pretty good puzzle, all things considered.
Oh, man. I'm reliving all this.
That was one of the more stressful puzzles, I feel like. Because I think all of us were like, wait, are we just like, can we do anything with this? Mm-hmm. And then Mikhail figured it out how to get in.
Yep. Okay, Mikhail, what was the next thing that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, yeah. So then the other thing, which I thought was really interesting, is that in the dining car, they had two windows. And they weren't actually windows. God. They were just...
I was wondering if you were going to talk about this.
Yeah,
thinking about it.
Yeah, they had like these curtains set up, and then they had TVs behind it to like simulate, I don't know, there's like landscape rushing by and some snow falling. But then... we don't know when this happened, but at some point, a person, quote unquote, from the story, wrote on the fog in the window. It was like a combination to a lockbox or something.
Just a three-number combination that we weren't able to figure out.
Yep.
Eight, three, nine.
Wait, eight where?
There's on the...
Meet. There's an underline 8. Oh. The key is in my lockbox
362. 362?
Wait,
so it's 362?
Yeah.
Oh my.
Someone wrote on the window.
Oh, wow.
What, the killer lockbox?
There's the key.
Key to what? This?
Yeah.
Oh. How many minutes does that be up there?
I didn't realize those were, like, hints, too.
Yeah, so it was, like, it must have been after we went into the second room, and then we never really looked around the first room again after that. And so it was just, like, this code could have been on there for, like, maybe 15, 20 minutes before we noticed it.
I bet it was. I would be surprised if it wasn't.
I bet it went up, like, immediately once we all exited the first room.
I bet it was the moment we put in the code. I bet unlocking the door triggered it, and nobody looked.
Yeah, we were all too excited.
Yeah, and then we all probably walked by it like 10 times or something before we saw it. Because we were all like struggling to figure out what on earth that code would be. And mm-hmm. Didn't someone like just start trying random numbers at one point?
Yes.
Yes.
That definitely happened.
And then finally we saw it and we were like, oh, the code is this, everyone. And then whoever was there was just like, ah.
Oh, my.
That was pretty frustrating. Because that wasn't even skill-based, I feel like. That was just like, oh, did you see it? Oh, well, bummer. Guess you didn't see it. And Katie never told us.
Oh, I guess there was one thing that I was very confused by is like, okay, so they had all these markers, like these little red dot stickers that they had over a bunch of the furniture to just mark, you know, they would put it on things to tell you we did not hide any clues in here, you know, so you wouldn't like be tearing down the curtains or rummaging through stuff, moving pictures and all that. And in the last room, there's this trunk. Like it was somebody's like living quarters. There was like a bed, there was a trunk and a desk, and the trunk. I made sure to look at it. There was nothing. There wasn't one of those stickers, but there was nothing in it. Like there were no clues on the. We didn't use anything from the trunk. I was like, why?
I remember that too. It was very funny.
Superfluous information, Mikhail.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They knew the trunk was durable enough to deal with you guys messing with it for a while until you figured out it was useless.
You guys, you were there too, Grant. I'm sure you looked in it. Throwing us under the bus.
I was definitely, I feel like, one of the first people to look in it.
I was rifling through everything I could find after the first room, after I saw how crazy intricate the first puzzle was, I had super high expectations for the second room. I was very intimidated.
I feel like the first room had like definitely the most intricate puzzles, and then past there, I feel like they might have gone downhill a bit. I don't know what you guys thought.
I think that's fair.
I think that's totally fair, yeah.
Well, especially when you consider, like, the Morse code, it was like there was a radio with a big thing that said Morse code directly on top of it. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely needed to give us a guide to decode it. They couldn't expect that you needed to know Morse code, but...
I know, but...
Still a little much. I agree.
They could have at least, like, hid the guide somewhere.
Yeah, ooh, yeah. At least that.
They could have expected us to guess all 10,000 combinations.
No.
I don't know if they could have done that.
They could have.
At least the numbers actually have a legitimate pattern to them.
They do, which is really nice.
Well, then they should have asked us to figure it out. Should have expected that we would guess they were numbers because we needed to open a combination lock that was all numbers, and then we should have had to deduce the pattern based on what we heard.
Yeah.
Would have been crazy.
Would have been good.
I would have enjoyed it.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know actually, if we could have handled that.
Yeah,
we could barely
no
just
way.
Hear the numbers anyway.
That's fair. Well, overall impressions, would do again.
Oh,
I'd love to do another one.
Absolutely.
Well, not that specific room, but I would like to do another puzzle room.
I would not like to do that same room again. Even for the record. Even to be on the scoreboard.
Oh, should we have put like a spoiler alert at the beginning of this or something?
Nah.
We don't have any listeners, Mikhail.
Also,
yeah, that's true.
I listen sometimes.
Thanks, Gramps.
Well, I didn't want to lie on your podcast and say I always listen.
No, that's
fair. I listen most of the time.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I appreciate you.
I think I've said this before, but this podcast is definitely just an excuse for me to talk to Jack and Mark.
Yeah,
on a regular basis.
That's reasonable.
And you're pretty cool too, Grant.
Thanks,
yeah,
Mikhail.
Grant.
Yeah.
All
right, Mikhail, what do you want to tell us about transitions?
What?
I don't know. That's what it says on... That's the next thing. It's the next topic.
On the itinerary.
I didn't put that there.
Anyway, you guys want to hear about a cool new invention I learned about?
Yes.
All right. It's called the Brava Light Oven. Actually, I think it's just called the Brava, but I call it the Brava Light Oven for context. It is a smart oven that uses a bunch of intricate sensors and bulbs that can cover a wide frequency band of lights in order to cook food much more quickly and intelligently and automatically.
Hmm.
So, for an example, the guy who wrote... I read an article about it before I went to their website and learned more. But the person who wrote the article said that the owners and creators of the oven made him a dinner that was salmon, asparagus, and potatoes by putting all three into the oven at the same time and pressing one button. And it took 6 minutes.
Whoa.
Can they be our newest sponsor?
Oh, I would love... I looked at their careers page the moment I saw that. I was like, wow, I would love this. It was very cool.
Please pardon this interruption while we bring you a brief word from our sponsors. Thank you. And now, back to the show. Oh, speaking of sponsors.
What?
Mark, this is where you put a fake ad read.
I refuse to.
Really?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I'm feeling tomorrow.
Okay. I came up with a good one that I can record for you later.
Okay. Sounds good.
Nice.
Operation Have a Conversation, brought to you by Grant, because he helped pay for the escape room that we talked about all episode. Yay, Grant.
Yay, Grant.
Yay.
Oh, wait.
Can you do... Like the Monty Python. Hooray!
I'm not dead yet.
That'll just be a moment.
Oh, yes, you are.
You guys want to do Mikhail, hot takes?
Well, I'm trying to figure out. Apparently, I did write transitions in the document.
I knew it!
The truth comes out.
But I don't know why. Huh. Oh, well. Yeah, we can do hot takes. Grant, have you listened since we started hot takes?
How long ago did you start hot takes?
That's a no. 2 episodes. That's definitely a no. Nope. He, you don't have to ask now. You know, because he doesn't know what it is. You know he doesn't know what it is.
True. Okay, Grant. You can participate if you want. You okay. don't have to.
We'll just ask.
We have a list. We have a list of topics, each of us individually, of various severity, or I guess scary. Seriousness. I think mine being typically the least serious.
Maybe.
But we just go around and ask each other for their hot take. So answer just whatever first comes to your mind about whatever the topic is. Okay?
You want to do an example first?
Oh, we would love to.
So I'm going to ask this to Jack just to give Grant an idea of what's going on. All right, you ready?
I'm always ready to answer a hot take.
All right, Jack, give me your hot take on picnics.
I think picnics are overly complicated meals. They require a lot more planning than your average meal. And although they can improve the setting of the meal because you don't have to eat inside and you can enjoy a beautiful day, I think all in all, they usually end up being kind of a hassle. But they are great romantic dates, so they have their utility. I just would not prefer them.
All right. That was a solid hot take.
Thank you.
Got it, Grant?
That was good.
Would you like one, Grant?
Sure.
All right.
Oh, I'll God, from Mark?
Grant. Yeah.
Marty's dreading this.
What?
Nah, you'll be fine. Grant?
Yes.
I would like your opinion on generic brand toilet paper.
Oh my, don't get me started on generic brand toilet paper. It's the worst. Because it's always like one ply and sucks. And just, you might as well use sandpaper. I don't like generic brand toilet paper, as you can probably guess.
Solid.
Did I do that correctly?
Oh, absolutely. Good.
Yeah.
Very off the cuff. I enjoyed it.
It's basically
doesn't need to be correct. It just needs to be hot.
Yep. It's basically just your chance to rant for 30 seconds to 2 minutes. All right, Jack, what do you got?
Who should I ask? Do I get to pick?
Yeah. It's a free-for-all.
Okay, Mark. What do you think about crank flashlights?
Crank flashlights, they're my absolute favorite, except for the fact that I've never had one that holds a charge. This is mostly from, like, you know, rose-tinted glasses looking at my youth camping, where, like, it would be like, oh, you know, here's a hyperactive young lad, let's give him a crank flashlight and a crank radio to work at the same time. Because the one that we had was a combined radio flashlight, so you needed to crank it fast enough to be able to power both. So that was a good time. But honestly, I don't think I've ever had one that actually, like, holds a charge much. It was mostly, like, cranking it to get the light in the first place, which I don't really think should be the design. But overall, I honestly really enjoyed them.
I like that. I'm glad I asked you, Mark. I don't know how Mikhail's would have been.
Well, we'll never find out.
No, we won't.
Because then it wouldn't be hot.
Yep.
Exactly. Grant, have you thought of one that you would like to ask? Because Jack came in the first time having not prepared either.
Oh,
I did a great job.
But you don't have to. Like, you don't need to feel pressure, but...
Give me, like, a minute and I'll figure something out.
Okay, we'll have...
I gotta brainstorm.
That's fine. Mikhail, would you like to... I guess I'll ask Mikhail one.
Sounds good to me.
Mikhail still needs one. Mikhail?
Yes.
What do you think about headphones without volume control?
Why would you ever have them? It doesn't make any sense. I remember the days when that was all you could get, and it sucked. Because, like, what if you wanted to change the volume? Well, okay, now I have to take off my backpack, unzip it, take out my enormous CD player, find the volume button, and change it. and put it back, zip my backpack, back it up. So that'll probably date me pretty well. But then just nowadays, it's like I really don't like having to reach all the way into my pocket even. Like, I know that's a lot closer, but still, it's like I would love to be able to just, you know, like either have it in line with the cord, or maybe sometimes it's like actually on the earpiece. Ah, geez, you need to have volume control in the headphones.
Just as cool. A short addendum, everybody should get Bluetooth headphones.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
It's the only yes. way to go.
I thought it was a gimmick until I got one pair, and then I realized, what have I been doing?
Mm-hmm. I had the it's same exact 50-50 experience.
Yeah. Oh my god. Stop me if I've talked about this before, but I've had this pair of Bluetooth this Bluetooth headset that I bought at the beginning of the summer and I've used extensively. It's called the Tektronix Aftershocks. I think they're the titanium model, but it's crazy. They don't actually go in your ear. What they do is they sit right on your temples. And then they vibrate the bones. So then it just like sends the music signal into your brain. There are actually little speakers on it, which help for some of the high ends. But for the most part, like if I have them playing music, like you really can't hear it unless you put them on. And the great thing about this is that I bike every day to work. So when I'm wearing these, my ears aren't covered. So I can be listening to music, but I can also hear all the cars and other bikers around me. It's great.
They are very cool. I haven't used them, but just based on all the descriptions I've heard from other podcasts, they do sound fantastic.
Yes.
All right, Grant, how you doing?
I got one.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm going to... Jack or Mikhail, who wants it?
Me.
What? Mikhail just did one.
Give it to Jack. We'll go around there. We'll go to Jack.
Jack, what's your hot take on LinkedIn?
Oh, I've been spending a lot of time on LinkedIn lately. I have been actively looking for jobs for weeks, which is a very stressful enterprise. And LinkedIn is the handiest way to look for jobs, but I am repeatedly solicited by job recruiters with nifty little messages about following them on Facebook and Twitter for job interview tips, and it makes me deeply aggravated. I always want to respond and yell at them about how unhelpful they're being. But anyway, totally LinkedIn fine. Overall, fine service. I still love that the... Do you guys have LinkedIns?
Yes.
Do any of you have LinkedIns?
Yeah.
So people still like share articles and stuff. And then if you read the comment threads, people bash each other just like on Facebook. It's just like adult professional Facebook where people are just like, no, you're retarded. It's just like, it's so brutal. I thought it would be all adults and it's not.
No, Jack, the scary thing is they are adults.
Dun, dun, dun. Plot twist. Okay. So. That means I assume it's me. It's my turn to ask.
Do it.
My turn to solicit a hot take. And I'm going back to Mark. How do you feel, Mark, about laptops that don't have HDMI ports?
Ooh, I don't like them, personally. that being said, I'm using one. but it does have mini HDMI, which is not great. But it is at least a port through which one can power a display. I'm sure in like 5 years, USB-C will be enough that like we'll all survive with USB-C to HDMI or DisplayPort stuff. But like right now, so many people use HDMI and it's so useful to just have it on hand right away without needing to worry about it. And because I don't like taking trips to Dongletown.
So. I was about to comment on that.
That sounded so dirty.
It's an official term in the tech world, Grant.
Is it?
Sure it is.
Dongle? Or take a trip to Dongletown?
The latter is what I was referring to.
Really? I've never heard that before, but I wish I had.
I really want to Google this to see if it's real, but I'm afraid.
It's mostly like, I mean, I listen to Relay FM shows, which Mikhail knows about.
Yeah.
A big tech podcast network. And
good stuff.
I think Gray was the first person that I heard say it, but it's way funnier when Mike says it, who's a British guy.
Oh my God, yeah.
They always say, like, take a trip to Dongletown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I Googled it, and the first response was from Relay. It was a Relay FM website, and it's titled Get On Down to Dongletown.
That sounds about right.
Yep. And then an Amazon ad for a all-in-one adapter for USB. Which is exactly what it should be.
There we go, then.
Grant, did you just add me on LinkedIn?
I added you, like, right as I asked the question.
Oh, my gosh. My phone just lit up.
Oh, God.
So you'll get LinkedIn notifications, but not Slack messages?
It's a Gmail.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Mikhail, are you ready?
Yep.
All right. This is going to get really hot.
Oh, yeah?
I want to hear what you have to say about loose leaf textbooks.
Two words? Recycling bin. This is more than two words. Okay, if you have a loose leaf textbook, I'm assuming that means a professor just hands you like a stack of paper, which is like a textbook, or usually maybe just like a couple of chapters. It's like, I get that you're trying to be helpful, but I'm trying, like, I've tried so hard in the past couple of years to get rid of as much paper in my life as possible. Like, that's why I have the iPad, and it's great. I can just load a PDF on there and I don't have to carry it around. I've even made my backpack so that it doesn't actually fit full-size sheets of paper, because then I just can't carry them around, and so I don't. But then I actually had a professor last semester who literally, like, he just, I don't know if he knew much about computers, which was interesting because he had, like, the newest MacBook, but it was always confused as to how it worked. But he would just, like, come to class and then just hand us like these giant packets of paper. And I asked him once, like, hey, can you just like send me the PDF? And he wouldn't.
Well, let me adjust your hot take and tell you what I meant.
Oh, was that okay. Not it?
Not quite.
Okay.
I mean more like like a full textbook that comes shrink wrapped and is meant to be put in a binder.
Oh my God. Also terrible, because, like, I mean, come on, you just shoved a bunch of paper in a printer, printed it out, shrink-wrapped it, and called it good. I mean, like, come on, man. If you're going to print a textbook, just, like, put a little bit more effort into it. At least, like, put a spiral ring binding, even though they're not great, but at least they're, like, it won't all fall apart as soon as you open it. It's like, come on, man, that's too much effort on my part to, like, a textbook with some assembly required. That is just ridiculous.
All right.
Reasonable.
Yep, I'm good.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Mikhail.
I'm gonna ask Grant. All right, Grant.
Yep.
What is your hot take on space junk?
I feel like space junk's a big issue, and need someone to deal with it, but I feel like it's one of those problems that there's not much of, like, in it at the moment, at least until it becomes such a big problem that it's going to be almost impossible to deal with. There's not a ton of, like, economic incentive for people to deal with it, and so I think it's going to be a really difficult problem to, like, motivate big groups of people and, like, real change to be made to help clean it up.
That was a good one. All right. You want to do one more round?
Sounds good.
Cool.
Grant? You can just go to Jack. We'll just go once more around the circle.
Okay. I'll go to Jack. Jack, what's your hot take on pocket watches?
Like, it doesn't go on your wrist. It actually is in your pocket with a chain.
Yeah, like old-timey pocket watches.
What an impractical thing. Who has pocket watches? I have never in my life seen a real pocket watch. The only pocket watch I've seen possibly in my entire life was in the escape room.
Are you serious?
I never see pocket watches. Why wouldn't you just have it on your wrist so that if you go, hey, I wonder what time it is, you just have to rotate your arm and then look, and then there's the time. Why would you have to reach into a pocket?
Can I give you some food for thought?
Always.
Most people don't wear watches, yet we pull our phones out of our pockets all the time.
Got him!
Yeah, no, but I have a watch.
But most people don't.
Yeah, but I do, so I can judge. I can sit on my ivory tower and laugh at all of you that take your phones out of your pockets.
Fair enough.
It is cold up here, in case you're wondering.
I wasn't, but thanks anyway.
Okay, so Mark, I'm not sure what your take on this will be, but what is your hot take on carbonated water?
Well, I don't know. I've had a roller coaster with carbonated water. I'm actually sitting right by Erin, and she's just giving me a look because she drinks like LaCroix and various other better brands than LaCroix all the time.
I love LaCroix.
No.
I really don't like LaCroix. There are some others that I've had that aren't terrible. But there are lots of good jokes about LaCroix. Yes. Probably one of my favorites being like, LaCroix tastes like someone who didn't want to admit that they've never had a fruit before, so that a friend describe it to them really quickly. So I mean, like, you know, obviously, like, club soda, some tonic water has its practical uses, but I'd much rather have just my normal water than waste my time dealing with a can of bubbly water. It doesn't, like, provide anything better to me.
Reasonable. Pragmatic.
Yep.
I suppose.
Okay, Mikhail.
What?
Are you ready?
Yes.
What's your hot take on frogs?
Frogs. Oh, boy. Well, some of them are pretty cute. Some of them remind me of Frog and Toad, which is great. I loved those books as a kid. Makes me want to eat cookies now. Okay, back to frogs. Some of them are real poisonous, which is kind of scary. This also reminds me of in 7th grade. I don't know why or how we got onto this topic, but our teacher described to us in 4 different ways how frogs reproduce. And she did it by, like, movie viewing restrictions. So she described it as in a G, and then PG, and then PG-13, and then R. And then everybody started bursting out laughing after that one, because it was hilarious.
Can you give us a recap?
No. Nope, that one's in the mind vault. All right.
Oh, man.
So wait, is it Mila? Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I got a good one. Who wants it?
Grant.
I'll take it.
Is it supposed to be Grant?
Grant. Yeah. Okay. Grant. I want your hot take on public dress codes.
What are public dress codes?
Like the fact that you can't just go around naked in public.
I don't know. I feel like they're probably a good thing, but like there are logical arguments against it, I feel like, but now that I've said that, I'm trying to think of logical arguments against it, and I'm kind of struggling a little bit. So, gosh, I don't know. I am not bothered by them. I have frequently heard from people who are bothered by them. And by frequently, I mean like maybe once or twice someone's complained about it. But I think I like public dress codes. I think it's probably kind of convenient not to have people running around naked everywhere, because I feel like after a while some people would...
Hashtag free the nipple.
I like that one.
That was a good
that
one.
That one threw me.
Yep.
I was not prepared.
Oh, that's the point.
That's what Mikhail always does. Mm-hmm. I think he's gotten the last one every single time.
I mean, you guys can stop me. You just haven't.
What was the one that you gave me? Was it immigration quotas?
Yes.
Yeah.
That one was crazy. That was so out of left field. Yeah. I didn't expect that at all. Immigration quotas.
I know.
But
right?
Anyway, is that?
I think that's a wrap.
What's that? Yeah, I'm gonna stop.
Is it a wrap or a sandwich?
All right, I'm stopping recording right now.
For her country. Her number can be found on a newspaper article.
Oh, the number is right here.
Oh my. Which country is she from?
Italy. I put her at Italy.
Italy? Italy is one. She has changed that to a one.
Wait, object T for two. Right, with the record. What did they use with ricin? Where's the ricin?
The ricin.
Okay.
Wait, what?
Seven.
What's the other one?
What cabin would they have gotten? That's six. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh yes.
Okay.
3150.
3150.
Under 10 minutes. Come on, you have 3 seconds.
Just under.
Okay. Hey guys.
Hey.
Yeah, I totally just like snuck up on you. How was that?
Good. That was good.
I think you're doing awesome here. That was intense, I'm guessing. Really?
Yeah.
You guys have a lot of time to spare. Most people, like the last team that got out was like 15 seconds, maybe. Like that, yeah. They all were like dying by the time we hit here. Hyperventilating, everything.
Part of them gotten
6, 7, 9, 10.
Yeah, we did
that.
Which one?
We did the full table twice.
We got it right. We got the logic puzzle correct, and then we didn't realize each like part had a separate number associated with it. Like the ricin poison was like 7 ounces. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize that. So we thought that we got the logic puzzle wrong.
Oh.
So then we did it again.
Yeah. I mean, you still made it out with plenty of time, though.
True.
Yeah.
Alrighty, and Katie was your game master?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quick check. I forget who's back there sometimes. Okay, and did you guys want a team name? We were Team Mark. Bones.
Sure.
Yes.
Alrighty, well, did you guys want to take a team picture or anything?
Okay, some people skip it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, we do.
Okay. Yep.
I knew we could do it, guys.